The Nine Lives of Montezuma. The Eighth Life. For some days, Montezuma waited under the cover of the woods for his friend to come back. Each evening at dusk, he would emerge from the shadows and make for the fishing hut. It was always deserted and silent. He would sniff around the old fish bones and prowl the fishing bank, calling the old man back, but he never came. And so it was that one evening he did not return to the woods, but instead made his way up through the buttercup field towards the farmstead beyond. After all, this was the way that they had taken old Sid. He approached the buildings cautiously, sneaking through the long grass, under docks, under thistles, all the while taking stock. His nose told him that this was the way his friend had come, but as he came up the lane and into the farmyard, the scent vanished totally. He thought for a moment that he should return to the fishing hut by the river. Whom, he knew, lay somewhere the other side of that river that he could not cross. He was about to retrace his steps when he heard the sound of singing on the far side of the farmyard wall. Montezuma was hungry. Hunting in the woods had not been good, not after a diet of trout and milk. And where there were people, there was always the possibility of food, so he decided to take a chance. And he bounded up the steps, jumped down into the vegetable garden beyond, and then padded through under the broad beans until he came into the sunlight beyond. Lily Hillstock was sitting on a swing under an apple tree in the corner of the garden, her head covered by a white hood and a great wooden cross hanging around her neck on a string, and she was draped in a long white habit that covered her from head to foot, and she sang in rhythm to her swinging a slow lilting hymn tune that repeated itself every few seconds. And on the grass, scattered around the swing, lay her pride of little animals. Two white rabbits with pink eyes and twitchy noses, a solitary still tortoise, assorted lizards and slow worms, three shaggy guinea pigs, a hamster and a speckled hen with a broken leg. And when she saw the cat stealing across the lawn, she sat up on her swing, put her feet down, scuffling the swing to a halt. Montezuma crouched low on the lawn, his eyes fixed on the hamster. His tail whisked gently, but his plans for the hamster were rudely interrupted. The girl in white was coming towards him. "If you come in peace," she said, holding up her hand in a sign of blessing, "if you come in peace, you are welcome. We are all God's creatures and we do not harm one another." At this moment, the animals at her feet sensed the presence of the cat. The rabbit scuttled under the nearest shrub. The tortoise lost its head, and the guinea pigs rushed back into their box. But the hamster was asleep by the speckled hen and noticed nothing. The lizards and the slow worms froze where they were. "We are all followers of the blessed St. Francis," said Lily, walking slowly towards the cat, who remained crouched and suspicious. A few paces away, she knelt down and held out both her hands. "Come, little cat, come and join us. I am Lily, a nun of the Order of Poor Clares, and I will care for you because you are a creature of God. That is what the blessed Clare taught us." Bemused but interested, Montezuma remained where he was until the little girl reached him, stroked him, and then picked him up in her arms. "There, little cat, you see, we mean you no harm. You feel thin. We shall feed you. You need shelter. You will live with us. You have been sent to join us and we shall care for you." Her mother was calling her from the back door. "Supper, Lily, come in for supper now." "Sister Lily, Reverend Mother, you must call me properly. You are Mother Superior and I'm Sister Lily. We agreed." She stroked the cat cradled in her arms and Montezuma responded immediately with his deep roaring purr. Her mother sighed and cast her eyes to heaven. "Sister Lily," she said, "Sister Lily, even nuns have to eat. Will you please come into the convent for supper now?" "Coming, Reverend Mother," Lily said. "But first we've got to feed this poor starving cat. He's come to us for help. Have you got a saucer of milk and some cornflakes?" At this, Lily's mother came round the corner and onto the lawn, shielding her eyes against the sun. "Where did you get that?" she said. "Where did it come from? Whose is it?" "God's," said Lily, "and he came from God. He needs something to eat, Reverend Mother." "Lily, this has gone far enough. We said that we had enough animals already in the convent, I mean in the house. There's no room for any more. We agreed. Oh, just this one, Reverend Mother. He's old and hungry. God has sent him. I know he has. Lily brought the cat into the kitchen and set him down by a saucer of creamy milk. Montezuma wasted no time but lapped the saucer clean and then looked up for more. That animal will have to go, Lily, said her mother. You know what your father thinks of cats. He won't have them on the place. And your Aunt Bessie would be horrified. She can't be in the same room with a cat without sneezing. And I will not become a rest home for batted animals. The cat must go. But Reverend Mother, Lily pushed the tears away from her eyes. Mummy, said Lily's mother. I'm your mummy, not your mother superior. This is a farmhouse, not a convent. Now take off those ridiculous clothes and come to your senses. Your father has told you often enough not to dress up like that. It's not right, not proper. You're carrying this thing too far. Be kind to animals by all means, but remember, there are people around as well. More's the pity, the girl mumbled quietly as she pulled off her nun's habit to reveal a Snoopy T-shirt and blue jeans. Her mother spoke sharply. What's that? I said it's a pity, Mum. He's a nice old cat, a gentle cat. We've never had a cat, and I've always wanted one. Can't we keep him, please? He won't be a nuisance. I'll look after him. It'll be the last one, I promise, the very last one. No. Her mother took her by the shoulders and shook her. No, Lily, that cat either belongs to someone or he's a stray. And he looks more like a stray to me. Now, the vet is coming here later on this evening to see Miranda. We'll give her to him and we'll know what to do for the best. But you know what he'll do, Lily said. He'll have him put to sleep. No one wants an old cat like this, all battered and torn. He'll have him killed, can't you see? If he's not wanted, then that's what's best for him, said her mother, stroking Lily's hair in an effort to console her. But he is wanted, cried Lily. I want him. At this moment, Mr. Hiltstock and Auntie Bessie came in. She sneezed once and ran out of the door, and that was enough to settle the argument for good. Montezuma was wrenched away from his milk and deposited unceremoniously into the bottom of an old corn sack. Mr. Hiltstock tied the top firmly and dumped him out in the old cart shed to await the vet's visit. Back in the house, Mr. Hiltstock blamed it all on the old tramp who'd been trespassing on his land. Every year he comes, he leaves dirt wherever he goes. You wash yourself properly, my girl, and don't go around picking up mangy old cats. I've told you before, cats are dirty things. That old man, he steals my fish, steals my milk, infects my veranda, and now he leaves his filthy cat wandering around my farm. He's not filthy, shouted Lily. She turned around from the sink and screamed at her father, tears pouring down her face. He's a kind old cat and sits a kind old man. Everyone says so. He's never done you any harm. You sent for the police and you had old Sid put in prison and now you're sending away his old cat and he'll be killed. And I'll pray for that cat every night till I die and then God will look after him in heaven and he'll be there when I get there. Only you won't see him. You'll be in hell with all the other murderers. Of course she was sent to her room where she flung herself on her bed and prayed. She prayed for the cat's life to be spared and went on praying till the tears stopped flowing and she was left only with a terrible still anger against her father. And it was while she was upstairs that the vet came, treated the cow and took away the cat, and Lily never saw him again. Out in the yard before he drove off, the vet peered into the sack in the boot of his car. Seen that one before somewhere, he said to Mr. Hiltstock. Seen him somewhere, sure I have. Only an old stray, Mr. Hiltstock said, should be put away. Too many like that, just running wild. You'll never find a home for him, not at his age. Not likely, I agree, said the vet. Looks a bit of an old warhorse to me. I've a few more calls to make, and then I'll take him to the RSPCA in town. They'll keep him for a day or two, and if he's not claimed, they'll put him down. Sure you wouldn't like to keep him. Good mouser by the look of him. But Mr. Hiltstock was already walking away. No mice on my farm, he said. There's no mice, so we don't need a cat. He'd be no use here. He's all yours. Matthew knew there was something wrong as soon as Emma calved. Normally a cow will stand up to lick her calf over him immediately after birth. But Emma just lay where she was on the straw and refused to get up. No amount of gentle persuasion or pulling would get her to move. And Matthew called his father in to help. I think it's that milk fever again, said Matthew. We've had a lot of it recently. You see if you can get her up. I've tried everything I know. And his father pulled the newborn calf around to where the cow could see it. Come on, old girl, she's yours, and you got to look after her. But Emma turned away and stared steadfastly in another direction. And then between them they used force, trying to rock the cow up onto her feet. But Emma weighed over half a ton and was not cooperating. Matthew's father stood back and took off his flat cap. "Gad, you're right," he said, "that milk fever. 'Tis the devil itself. It's a vet's job. You better have him in quick. If he's not here fast, we'll lose that cow and the calf as well, as likely as not." They contacted the vet by radio phone a few minutes after he'd left Mr. Hillstock's farm. They said it was an emergency and that there was no time to lose. A quarter of an hour later, he came down the farm track in a cloud of dust and went straight into the shippen to examine the cow. Matthew and his father had been right. It was diagnosed as milk fever, and the vet went back to his car for the syringe. Matthew waited with Emma. "Got to get you up," he said. "You've got to get on with it, you know. That calf of yours needs the milk, and you've not given him anything yet. And it was a bull calf again. I've told you often enough, it's heifers we want here. You're an inconvenient sort of cow, but I want you to live, so get up." "Still talking to them," said the vet, as he came back into the shippen with Matthew's father. "It's not a talk she needs, it's this. A nice drop of calcium, and she'll be well on her way." And so she was. It was not long before Emma was on her feet, with her calf suckling frantically underneath her. "Go to it, son," said the vet, packing his bag and rolling his sleeves. "You're luckier than some I've seen today." "What do you mean?" said Matthew. "Nothing," said the vet, "nothing. It's just that I like to see results. I spent far too much of my time putting animals to sleep. I'm just off now into the town to the RSPCA. Another stray. I've never got used to it, and I've been at it now for 5 years. Perhaps I'm in the wrong job." "No, you're not, lad," said Matthew's father. "No, you're not. You've saved that cow, and I can think of many more you've put to rights for us. You stay put." "Nice when it works out," said the vet as he started up his car. He had already driven out of the yard gate when Matthew suddenly started shouting and tore up the lane after him, waving his hands. The vet spotted Matthew in the driving mirror and screeched to a dusty halt. Matthew came running up and leant on the car door. "Stray, you said? What's that, Matthew?" The vet turned off his engine. "Stray? You said you had a stray? Stray what?" "Oh, just a cat," said the vet. "Just an old Tom found wandering up on the old Hillstock's farm. Why, you wouldn't want a cat, would you? You've got one already, haven't you?" "He's dead," said Matthew. "Run over a few days ago on the road to the village." "Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew. Sorry to hear that. Would you like a look at this one? He's old, but he looks a tough old devil. He'd be good value on your farm, I should think. And know he'd be a lot better off here than where he's bound for." "What colour is he?" Matthew asked as the vet tried to undo the string around the top of the sack. "Don't know, difficult to see in the bottom of a sack, but I'd say he was a gingery sort of a cat with crumpled ears. I've seen him somewhere before, sure I have. I can't get this confounded cord loose." Matthew gripped his arm. "Did you say ginger?" The vet nodded. "With crumpled ears? I think so. But Monty had crumpled ears, and he's ginger." "Monty?" The vet was looking perplexed. "My old cat," said Matthew. "But you said your cat was dead. Run over, you said." The vet finally loosened the cord and pulled open the sack. "See for yourself, Matthew, but watch his claws. He doesn't like being in that sack. He scratched me once today already." As Matthew looked into the sack, his father came puffing up the lane and reached a car. "It's him," Matthew said, looking up at the vet and beaming. "It's Monty." "Monty's dead," said Matthew's father. "We buried him last week. It can't be him." "He was dead," said Matthew as he pulled Montezuma out of the sack. "He was dead and I buried him, but now he's alive again." He held Montezuma up in the air and examined the white patch on the throat. "I thought so. I knew that patch wasn't the same on the other cat." He set Montezuma down on the ground and crouched down beside him to stroke him. "Matthew," said the vet, "you're not making much sense." "He is," said Matthew's father. "Gad, the boy's right. That Monty's back from the dead." "It's quite simple," said Matthew. "I buried the wrong cat." "But this one was found over 10 miles away on Hillstock land," said the vet. "He'd been living with an old tramp, or that's what I was told." Montezuma sat where he was in the dust for a few moments, his eyes still blinded by the bright sun. He looked all around him and up at Matthew to be quite sure that the voice really did belong to the person he had remembered. It did. And at that very moment, Sam came up behind the car and the cat's back arched instinctively and then relaxed, and the two approached each other and stood nose to nose. And the three men looked on as the two animals checked each other over and came to full recognition. And for the first time in his life, Montezuma brushed himself up against the dog, his tail trembling with affection. Sam looked askance at this, and his ears went back, but he stood his ground as the cat wound its way in and out of his legs, purring ecstatically. "That's the only cat Sam can live with," said Matthew. "Same as me," said Matthew's father. "There's not another cat I'd have in my house, I can tell you that." "Then that was the one I fixed up after that dog fight a few years back," said the vet. "Same cat," said Matthew, "same dog." Montezuma was hungry again. He looked up and saw his back door and did not wait to be invited. He bounded down the path and disappeared inside. Matthew and his father waited for the scream of delight they knew would follow. It came. A few moments later, Matthew's mother came out of the door, shouting to the whole world that she had found Monty, that Monty had come back. "I'm pleased I came today," said the vet. "So am I," said Matthew. "So am I."